the conduct is so bad that it goes to the guts, basically, of our constitutional form of government.
An FBI whistleblower raises questions about the team that investigated and prosecuted Ted Stevens. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 22nd of December. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a detox center with a unique focus opens in Fairbanks.
We get people in, we treat them with dignity and respect, and maybe change their lifestyle.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Application nam kemiriluchi January 9th pailgan tokhluluku 1-800-478-1456 una kingun khtok US Fish and Wildlife Service Office of Subsistence Management.
Help manage subsistence hunting and fishing in Alaska. Apply for a seat on your local federal subsistence regional advisory council. The deadline for applications is January 9th. For more information, call 800-478-1456. This announcement is sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Office of Subsistence Management.
Lawyers for Senator Ted Stevens today called for his felony conviction to be thrown out. The move comes after an FBI agent acting as a whistleblower highlighted Justice Department misconduct during the senator's investigation and trial. U.S. District Judge Emmett Sullivan released the 8-page complaint today, agreeing to protecting the identity of the agent who filed the complaint, along with other information that was not disclosed. The heavily redacted document alleges a long list of inappropriate behavior by the Justice Department, including paying off sources and failing to turn over evidence to the Stevens defense team at trial. Webb Shea is a former U.S. attorney for the state of Alaska who has followed Alaska's corruption investigation closely. In the past, he has spoken very highly about the Justice Department and the department's public integrity section. But after reading the documents today, he says he is shocked and disturbed.
The conduct is so bad that it goes to the guts, basically, of our constitutional form of government. After the conviction and after certain conduct occurred during the Stevens trial, that at that time, the prosecution's conduct, in my opinion, was the worst I'd seen in over 40 years of being associated with the legal profession and criminal prosecutions.
You said that you were concerned in the lead up to what we saw come out in this document now from this whistleblower. Were you therefore not surprised to see this come out?
No, I was shocked. I mean, I the detail in this 8-page single-spaced whistleblower complaint is just off the scale. And when I say, I mean, it is done extremely professionally. It's apparent to me that public integrity made multiple grave errors affecting not only Ted Stevens' case, but perhaps multiple other political corruption cases in Alaska.
Is there any reason to suspect that FBI agents in Alaska are involved in this alleged corruption, or do you think this is a Washington staff problem?
It appears to me, from looking at this complaint by the whistleblower, that the whistleblower has been working in Alaska for quite a number of years. I mean, that's my opinion. But it appears to me that public integrity on multiple times was alerted to the problem, and on multiple occasions they intentionally did things that were absolutely violations of the constitutional rights of Senator Stevens and perhaps multiple other defendants.
Stevens' lawyers have asked Judge Sullivan to throw out the Stevens verdict and declare a mistrial or grant a new trial. What do you think the right course would be given this information that's come to light?
Well, my feeling is, quite frankly, that the conduct so taints, going back to grand jury presentation, everything. I think the indictment needs to be thrown out. And I think the indictment needs to be dismissed. I think it is a grave, grave injustice.
Have you ever seen anything that comes close to this type
nothing,
of...
Nothing that even comes close. My personal feeling is that multiple people in the Department of Justice are going to be going to jail. And I'm talking about prosecutors and potentially others that are involved in law enforcement matters. It appears to me that there is a conspiratorial cover-up of failing to address obvious ongoing gross misconduct centering and around Bill Allen. Anything, any prosecution that has gone on in Alaska where Bill Allen played a key role, or in the stead Ted Stevens prosecution in Washington, D.C., needs to be totally reviewed and evaluated.
Webb Shea is a former U.S. attorney for the state of Alaska. Judge Sullivan is expected to hold a hearing in early January on some of Stevens' charges against the Justice Department team that convicted him. Copies of the documents will be on our website, aprn.org. Oregon State University marine biology professor Jane Lubchenco has been chosen to head up the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, by the incoming Obama administration. Lubchenco is being hailed by conservationists as a world-class scientist. Lubchenco has criticized NOAA in the past for not working more aggressively to stop overfishing. Dr. Jeff Short spent 30 years with NOAA before joining the Juno branch of the conservation organization Oceana. Dr. Short is a chemist. He says Lubchenco is a highly qualified and appropriate candidate for helping NOAA overcome problems it's had with carrying out its mission.
I think it will be an outstanding administrator for NOAA, and will go a long way toward reversing some of the problems that have been cropping up, particularly over the last 8 years.
Short says he'd like to see Lubchenco unravel some of the bureaucratic knots that he says scientists now face in the agency so they can spend more time engaged in science and less time on paperwork. He says Lubchenco will be an excellent advocate for furthering the work that some NOAA researchers have begun in focusing attention on ocean acidification.
But they have done so against very long odds and need a great deal more support than has been available so far to make the kind of progress that's needed to face this growing threat.
Short says Lubchenco will also encourage NOAA fisheries to work faster on implementing an ecosystem style of management rather than single species management. A new alcohol and drug detox facility is opening in Fairbanks. The Fairbanks Native Association's Gateway Recovery Center has resulted from a several-year community effort by a broad spectrum of local organizations. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The Fairbanks Native Association has long provided detox through its Ralph Perdue Rehabilitation Center, but space has been limited. The new Gateway to Recovery facility, located a mile down the road, will focus strictly on getting alcohol and drug abusers off the street for initial detox. Center coordinator Kate Wood says the 16-bed facility's focused program is unique.
This is the first one. In fact, there's really nothing in the country. There have been similar things attached to hospitals, but no standalone buildings. So this is kind of exciting. I'm sure we'll find some glitches in the whole system.
The system uses nurses trained in crisis management and a mix of monitoring and medication to get clients through the intense detoxification process. Wood says clients can walk in or be delivered by police or local community service patrol vans.
So they'll come in, they'll be given an examination just by the nurse to make sure they have no trauma. So anything that's medically necessary would have to be go to the hospital. Otherwise, we will be seeing them here. We see people come in at their worst, and I think why we all work here is we see them leaving in much better shape.
It's hoped the increased capacity of the new detox center will divert the flow of chronic inebriates through the hospital and jail. Wood says the new facility is better equipped to handle people with a range of conditions related to their substance abuse.
We're calling it enhanced because it's taking in more people and that they have psychiatric problems as well as substance abuse problems.
Wood says the center's goal is to help clients take the first step and then move on to FNA's longer-term treatment programs.
We get people in, we treat them with dignity and respect and offer them services, encourage them to get into treatment, and maybe change their lifestyle.
The center is open to anyone, regardless of their ability to pay for treatment. Wood says the new facility fits Medicare guidelines, which will enable better cost recovery, but that the Gateway Center will still rely on state support, which has been declining. The facility is on Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority land. The $4 million center, built with support of the Rasmussen Foundation and other funders, begins accepting clients after the first of the year. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a chilly outing in Sitka.
It's an opportunity to see acres and acres of Sitkan flesh out there in midwinter.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the new AT&T, your world delivered. Support for APR and coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood comes from the Alaska Sea Life Center, Alaska's unique marine research facility and public aquarium.
Alaska Airlines had more trouble today with its flights heading in and out of airports in Washington and Oregon. Extreme winter weather has hampered airports in both states, shutting down the Portland airport entirely. A limited number of Alaska flights made it to and from Seattle today. Marianne Lindsay is a spokesperson for the company, echoing the likely sentiments of many passengers. She says the cancellations couldn't have happened at a worse time.
If there was ever a week that would be the worst week to do it, it's this week. It's kind of the perfect storm in a way because we were already very full with flights. This is traditionally our busiest time with people flying for the holidays. It's impacted Alaska and Horizon in a huge way.
Lindsay says normal schedules are expected to resume tomorrow. Customers who need refunds or want to rebook can call the airline's customer service number. Lindsay says hold times are long, but should be improving. Construction of the Tulsa-Quachief mine near Juneau has been suspended for at least 3 weeks. Redfern Resources suspended construction activities on Thursday at the mine in the Canadian portion of the Taku River watershed. The company says the hiatus was planned for the holidays, but it has put construction on hold for an indefinite period while the company figures out its finances. A Redfern spokeswoman could not be reached by deadline, but a company statement says Redfern believes it is prudent to reduce its short-term expenditures and use its cash for the most critical parts of the Tulsa-Quachief project. The Redfern statement says construction of a hover barge for the mine is continuing. The hover barge would be used to transport minerals and supplies along the shallow Taku River. Haytham Hodley is a mining industry investment analyst with Salmon Partners in Vancouver.
In the current environment, we're seeing a lot of mining companies tend towards cash preservation in an effort to maintain what cash they have on the books and what could prove to be very difficult capital markets in the near future.
He says a lot of companies are deferring new mine projects and dividend payments and putting non-essential capital expenditures on hold. Alaska regulators have also put the permitting process for the Tulsa-Quachief on hold until Redfern provides additional information on the potential impacts of hover barges on the Taku River and its salmon habitat. The Taku is Southeast Alaska's most productive salmon stream. The company's stock rose by 1/3 today. It's now worth 4 cents a share. Company stock has fallen by 85% since the start of the year. DNA tests have failed to link ancient human remains found in a southeast cave with contemporary Alaska natives. But sponsors of the tests say the results may have missed something. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Scientists found human bones about a dozen years ago while excavating Prince of Wales Island's On Your Knees Cave. They got permission from tribal groups to conduct research on the remains, and they learned they were from a man who had died about 10,300 years ago. DNA tests showed evidence that the man shared ancestry with indigenous Americans as far south as Peru, but a regional cultural organization hoped to determine the man's connection to contemporary southeast natives. The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute worked with scientists to collect DNA samples from 230 people during a cultural celebration in June, and they compared the results with DNA from the caveman, who is called Shukaka. Rosita Worrell heads up the Heritage Institute.
We actually found that we were not able to identify anyone who was related in the maternal line directly to Shukaka.
But that isn't the end of the investigation. The sampling only searched for haplogroup D, a rare mitochondrial DNA marker handed down through mothers. That marker is found in only 1.5% of Native Americans, but it's still one of the best links to use for indigenous people on the continent. Molecular anthropologist Brian Kemp, the project's lead researcher, says other markers could still make the connection, and Worrell, an anthropologist, says other factors could have influenced the test's outcome.
It could be that our sample was too small, or the DNA marker could have been lost in our population over time. It happens often when you have very small populations and you have a very rare DNA marker. So it does not rule out a relationship.
Another factor could be different waves of settlement and migration. Worrell says her study of Tlingit history and art suggests an earlier indigenous population could have merged with an incoming group, changing the genetic mix. Whatever the reason, Worrell says the earlier tests identifying Shukaka as native contribute to an understanding of the region's first human residents.
I think it goes a long way in supporting that coastal migration, because although we don't have all of the evidence here available to us, just in discussion with Dr. Kemp, we know that the DNA, the haplogroup A, is not as prevalent in the interior as it is along the coast.
The Heritage Institute does not plan further DNA tests because of the cost and the lack of data to compare it to, but it says results will be used to study genetic variations among Alaska Natives and other indigenous populations. It's already turned up a long-distance link with coastal Washington residents. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
The Mat-Su Borough expects to break ground on a new recycling center as early as next spring. The facility will help the borough recycle as much as 25% of the waste that would otherwise end up in the local landfill. That's more than 10 times what Valley Community for Recycling Solutions can handle at its current location. The building has no running water and porta-potties for restrooms. Molly Boyer is the organization's executive director. She says it also lacks adequate indoor workspace.
And in the summer, that's not so big a deal, but in the middle of winter, when the ice, the snow, the cold temperatures, and we're in Palmer, and we're in a particularly windy spot here, so we have clocked 80 miles an hour wind.
Newspaper and office paper recycled in Alaska are used to make insulation, but most other recycled goods are shipped outside. Boyer says the new center will help change that with classroom space and a workstation for college students to develop new markets in-state.
To come and figure out what else we can get out of the waste stream, what could be used locally, and what are viable opportunities for manufacturing up here with these commodities.
Last week, the federal government announced a $3 million grant for the facility. It was the final piece of funding necessary to build the $6.5 million center. The rest of the money is coming from the Mat-Su Borough and the state of Alaska. Boyer says the new building will allow Valley residents to begin recycling glass, but the Anchorage Recycling Center plans to stop accepting glass starting in January. The Solid Waste Services Department says there's too much supply for glass and not enough demand. The city has already stopped accepting plastic bags for recycling.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and by
Northern Air Cargo, with scheduled flights to 16 destinations throughout Alaska every week. Northern Air Cargo, building strong relationships with the communities they serve.
Anchorage's Spinard neighborhood is undergoing a gradual change for the better. New businesses are opening up, and the area has begun to sport a new look. But some less positive elements remain, and on Saturday, two police officers met with residents to offer a new approach to fight those problems. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Matt Burkholder is chair of the Spinard Community Council. He knows the neighborhood. After all, he grew up there.
Spinard, over the years, has always been a colorful area to be in.
Saturday afternoon, about 30 residents gathered at the Spinard Recreation Center in reaction to some of the darker tones in that colorful spectrum. For over 2 hours, they held a special community council meeting on public safety with two Anchorage police officers, Captain Tom Nelson and Lieutenant Gary Gilliam. Nelson is division manager for community services, and Gilliam heads the Community Action Police Team, or CAPT. Some of the problems were long-standing to the area: inebriation, drug dealing, and prostitution. There were also sleep-thwarting disturbances, such as cars idling, an alarm set off, and loud music blaring from parked cars. The last one particularly prominent at the rec center itself, according to nearby neighbors. But more alarming, the group told of sporadic gunshots, including a recent nighttime disturbance involving an automatic weapon. Officers Nelson and Gilliam said Spinard was to be the focus of a police project called SARA. Gilliam says SARA stands for Scan, Analysis, Reconnaissance, and Action. It represents a break from normal police procedure.
Traditional policing is we are reactive, we hear about a problem, and then we go to try to solve it. Well, we're trying to do two things here. We're trying to say what has happened, and then what is it that we can do to intervene and prevent future incidents of those.
Some of the what has happened aspect began at Saturday's meeting, where the Spinard folks looked at a large hotspot map Gilliam had brought. Several said the zones depicted as quiet were far from it. The head of the CAP team was not surprised. After all, he says, the map records only reported incidents, and, as was apparent at the meeting, not everyone calls the police.
One person says, well, geez, you know, I can never get through. You guys never do anything. I call and call and call. Another person says, well, yeah, it happens all the time, but I've given up calling. And yet another person says, I'm faithful about calling. I call every time. So our statistics is the most accurate we have, but we know from talking to people like this, it's not accurate. So what we want to do is try to get the best picture we can of the real problem.
With solid neighborhood support, the program can make a difference. Spinard is the second Anchorage SARA neighborhood. The first was Fairview, where streetwalkers and inebriates were a primary focus. Since that program began, Gilliam reports, the Fairview Cars has enjoyed increased business, and more customers are walking to the store with their children. After the meeting, Council Chair Burkholder saw another benefit from the new police project in Spinard, one extending beyond misdemeanors and felonies.
Get the community to bind back together like it used to be. You don't know your neighbor, maybe, you know, just because you don't feel like you have no connection. And I think this might be just part of another step in getting the community connected again.
The next step in the SARA process is to recruit more Spinard residents, business owners, and landlords, and following the Fairview example, form committees directed toward specific problems. This is Len Anderson.
Temperatures in the 20s and a brisk north wind once again failed to deter more than 200 Sitkins from taking the plunge this Saturday at the annual polar dip. With much skin showing, the enthusiastic herd thundered into ocean water of a little over 40 degrees. Although many dippers submerged entirely, most got wet to the chest to qualify for a certificate of temporary insanity issued by qualified mental health professionals. KCAW student reporter Caitlin Woolsey has this audio postcard from the day.
Hi, you going in? Me too.
It's kind of cold.
My family said they were going in, but they chickened out.
There's not many rules, but the only one is be careful. So it's a little icy today. Proceed cautiously.
Yes, I think so. I think I might go for the dunk. I've got the waterproof mascara on, so I'm ready.
Okay.
What do you have to do to demonstrate insanity? What's the... We all get it. We all get
the
certificate.
Sort of the test level.
Oh, we're going to go beyond that.
Okay. Oh, we'll see.
The camaraderie and the atmosphere.
The atmosphere. How would you describe the atmosphere here?
Sitka-ness.
Sitka-ness.
Yes.
Do you care to elaborate?
It's a word that cannot be elaborated upon.
My name is Steve Wall, and I'm one of the dip psychologists here. I have seen a lot of insanity in this particular place.
Well, I'm in my fluorescent orange school bus jacket, but I'm going to take it off soon and go down just to my skivvies. But I'm also wearing a plunger on my head because we're making the plunge.
Ah, yeah? I see.
The biggest problem with my plunger is that it won't come off my head because I'm bald. So when the cold air sucks it up and I can't pull it off, I get this big round hickey on top of my head. It's awful. But, you know, it's worth it. It's a sacrifice you make, you know.
Oh, I ran in so fast, my body seized up. I pulled a hamstring. I was incapacitated for a week.
I couldn't move.
Where's my towel?
Oh, yeah. Talk about apothermia. I was about to wimp out, but I was like, I came this far. I'm getting in.
I made her. I pushed her down the hill.
My name is Steve Gage, and I am the Sitka Polar Dip director.
It looked like people kind of jumped the gun. Was there any big sound off?
No, I went down and I sort of, it was maybe a few minutes before 12, but people seemed to be ready and they didn't want people to stand around for too long getting cold. So we declared the dip open at maybe 11:59, but right around noon.
It's freezing and the towels keep warm.
Yeah. What are you going to do now?
Go home and take a shower.
How are hot cocoa sales?
Hot cocoa sales are really good because it's free. So it's a positive reinforcement for insane behavior.
My head is clearer than it's been in all of 2008. I'm thinking with more clarity than I ever have until my speech starts to slow and I have the uncontrollable shiver.
It's an opportunity to see acres and acres of Sitkin flesh out there in midwinter, all goose pimpled and lovely.
That audio postcard was produced by KCAW student reporter Caitlin Woolsey. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, John Ryan and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Len Anderson in Anchorage, and Caitlin Woolsey in Sitka. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alaska Business Monthly, giving voice to Alaska business. First National Bank, Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The Anchorage Convention and Visitors Bureau. Anchorage offers big wild adventures all year long. You can explore online at anchorage.net/stay, your source for winter event information.
And by
BP Alaska. BP is focused on the future, getting more oil out of Prudhoe Bay and bringing Alaska's gas to North America.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.